I'd like now to welcome to the program Victoria Addison. She's the owner of Addison Row Fine Art on Marcy Street here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
So you have a show in the gallery right now until the 12th of September called Oscar Blumner, Little Gems. Now, who was the artist Oscar Blumner?
Oscar Blumner was a very interesting artist and, to me, represents the very tenets of color and brightness and energy and life in art. He came to this country from Germany in 1892. He was an architect by trade, and he lived mostly between Chicago and New York doing his architecture. In 1910, he met Alfred Stieglitz. Well, we know what an amazing man Stieglitz was.
The husband of George O'Keefe and the patron of so many artists whose work he showed in his galleries.
Right. And this association opened up a whole world for him. He became one of Stieglitz's group, so to speak. He had his first one-man show at the 291 Gallery in 1915. And he was associated with a lot of very important artists we know, George O'Keefe, Marston Hartley, John Maron, the whole group. And before his shows, and actually around the time he met Stieglitz, he had given up architecture and really become an artist. And he called himself a pure colorist. In fact, he called himself the Vermilionaire.
Because he liked the color vermilion.
He loved it. He loved red. Red was everything to him. He told Stieglitz that he invented red. But it's mostly what he would do is paint everything you and I are used to seeing. Cityscapes, landscapes, the trees, the sky, everything around us that we recognize. But he painted it in color. And so the trees could be black with yellow and purple leaves.
So unrealistic color, yeah.
Totally unrealistic. In fact, he was creating. He didn't want to be a copyist. He didn't want to be like the classically trained artists who did portraits. He wanted to create. He wanted to be absolutely unique. And he would actually paint almost unworldly-like subjects. But when you look at them, they don't seem that way. They just evoke emotion, and you think that you've seen this before. But he had a whole theory that certain colors juxtaposed to each other would create moods. And so he would do drawing after drawing after drawing, and he'd write little notes to himself as to what colors should be next to each other, and that would create the mood. So he was very methodical about his art, but he was also just thinking of it as a composition, as music, as evoking moods and excitement. So
he lived a life in which he didn't achieve major success, and then he took his own life.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's amazing, because to look at his art, you wouldn't think he was a very sad man.
Yeah, right.
But he was very sad. He struggled a lot with his art. He struggled with being successful. He struggled with money issues. And you wouldn't see that when you look at his work, because a lot of his moonscapes or sunscapes, the circular energy around that vision is bright and colorful and all about life. But truly, he was very sad. And he was very connected to his wife. His wife died many years before him, and that sort of sent him into a little decline. And then in 1935, he was hit by a car, which really affected his health, and he started to go into a decline and then was told he couldn't paint. So beyond that, his life really became very unhappy, and he was very disillusioned. So he actually commits suicide, and he planned it very carefully. He put a white cloth on his bed and a white cloth over him, and he slit his wrists and his neck.
Oh, Lord.
So going by the Vermilionaire, there's... Oh, God. Yeah, you know, so he was a pretty dramatic guy, all in all.
So then after his death, I mean, here you are in an art gallery showing his work? I mean, what happened? Was he suddenly elevated to the great artist that he was later thought of as being, or did he just slide into obscurity for a while?
Well, it's been sort of an up-and-down process for him. There have been lots of shows of his work. There have been lots of museum exhibitions, a lot of books, a lot of articles written about him. His estate really started being promoted in the 70s. That's when I first started in the art business, and I knew about his work back then. And I think most recently there was a huge retrospective at the Whitney Museum, and that's been in the last 5 years. So he's never reached the zenith that some artists do, but he also has had quite a bit of recognition since his death.
So where does he stand? I mean, if somebody has a show at the Whitney Museum in New York, then that kind of elevates them. But where does he stand among the artists of the Stieglitz Circle when there's a collection, when somebody, a museum or an individual, is collecting art of that time? Do they always have a Blumner or more than one Oscar Blumner painting?
Well, they should, yes. They should consider that. In fact, there's a book right now called Pioneers, and that's all about Stieglitz's group and the artists from that period, and he's in there.
Right.
He's in every reference. He's in every book. His format was small. The reason I titled my show Little Gems is he really didn't paint large paintings, a few. And most of those, of course, are in private collections. And they're not easy to get to see,
right,
unless there's a big museum exhibition.
In which case they borrow from those private collectors for
exactly.
a few months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you, when you're putting together, you know, albeit a small exhibition in a gallery, but an exhibition of this artist's work or any artist's work, how do you find out, A, who has these pieces, and B, who's willing to part with them? In other words, to give them to a gallery with the potential of selling them.
It's a long process. A lot of it started really because a gentleman came to me who has a whole collection of drawings by Oscar Blumner, and he wanted me to have an exhibition at the gallery. And I thought, well, I have always loved Blumner's work. I've always been a fan of his work. Wouldn't that be wonderful to be able to do that? But I knew I didn't just want to do drawings, that there's much more to Blumner's work and to an exhibition, and especially him being a colorist, you want to be able to represent works that represent what he was capable of painting. So I started this process of, well, this would be very exciting. Where do I go, like you asked? And I've been in the business a very long time. I have a lot of colleagues all around the country, and I have followed the market through auctions and private sales for a lot of years. If you go to galleries, you'll see things on their walls. If you go to auctions, things come up for sale. So I started putting the word out, basically, that I was going to be doing a Blumner show. And this took me a little over a year to finally get from first thinking about doing it to putting it on the wall. And I took several trips back east, and I talked to different colleagues, and I asked people if they knew of anything in private hands, then if people wanted to. So bit by bit, that's how it developed, really. I got a lot of support in the art community, a lot of people willing to help me.
Now, on the other side, do you find that people are really interested in adding work by this artist to their collections?
I've been really actually very excited because a lot of people haven't known who Oscar Blumner was. Mostly people who are not big-time collectors but interested in art. And when the article came out in the journal and when I sent out announcements to a lot of my mailing list, people went online. And they said, who is this guy? This is fabulous. This is beautiful. Who is he? And I had friends call me and say, this is so great. We didn't know anything about him. And we went online and we learned. And then I'd have people come in with the article or the mailer or word of mouth, people saying, you need to come and see the show. So that was very good, I thought. It was good to get people who didn't know who he was to come in and see, and then to spread it out to the community of people who are interested in his work and know him. In fact, I actually had the curator from the Stetson Museum come in and see the show specifically because she was going to be here. Now, the Stetson Museum inherited a major body of work from Oscar Blumner's daughter.
Uh-huh.
And so they're very versed in keeping his name out there and promoting him. In fact, there's an exhibition they're going to have in the fall. And she wanted to come in and see the show, and she was just thrilled to see what we had.
How do you determine the value of a work of art, of a painting, of a drawing, whether it be by Blumner or somebody else? And what are the factors? I mean, the same painting might have cost $47 when he was alive.
Exactly.
That costs $150,000 now or something like that. In the current day, what are the factors that push the value of an artist's work up or down?
It's very complicated. It is not an easy process. I do this a lot because I'm also an appraiser. And you have to follow markets. You have to follow trends. You have to know what has sold privately through other dealers. You have to know what's been selling at auction. You have to understand the quality, the medium, the size variation, the dates in which the pieces were painted, because some artists had a period that they were more well known for than others. Some works, like for Blumner, things from the teens are considered very valuable. But they're stylistically different than things that are later. And so you have to follow really the markets and the trends and the artists and the pieces.
So for example, if Blumner has a show at the Whitney Museum, does the value of his work double overnight?
It doesn't double overnight, but it gives solidity to the market. It definitely gives solidity to the value of the artist and the importance of the artist.
Meaning solidity means it's not as likely to go down?
It's not going to disappear, one would hope.
What about the stock market? When the stock market dives by 7 zillion points or whatever, does the value of art also go down?
No, it doesn't dive like that. I've seen the markets go up and down. I've seen trends go up and down. I've seen, like in the late 80s, when a lot of the market was being driven by money from Japan and people were pushing the market. There are artificial means that push pricing. But it doesn't go up one day and down one day, not like the stock market. It doesn't crash quite like that. But it's a very interesting, exciting business, because also you can have a painting sell at auction that's estimated for maybe $2 or $3 million, and you have two people who are just dying to have this painting, and suddenly it sells for $14 or $18 million. Well, that does push the rest of that art's value up a little bit.
Right.
But
that's the craziness of auctions.
Oh,
I've seen rug auctions where two people got into a bidding war over something that wasn't even very good.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. I just love going to auction for that reason. And I love standing on the sidelines and just watching what's being done. Because I don't want to say it's a game. It's not a game, because this is serious money and this is serious art and people love it. But it's a fascinating development that we've had, where the auctions are taking over so much of the trend of the market.
The show is called Oscar Blumner Little Gems, and it's at the Addison Row Fine Art Gallery on Marcy Street here in Santa Fe. Victoria Addison, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's been a great pleasure and a lot of fun.
Oh, I forgot to say. And the show will be up until September 12th.
That's correct, right?